Whether your idea of fun is cooking a fish you just caught over a campfire, or just settling into a comfy booth and ordering pie at a diner, we've got you covered today on Travel with Rick Steves. We'll explore the wilderness comforts along the coast and backcountry of Canada's British Columbia a little later in the hour. We're starting off today with fuel for another road trip across the USA with Jane and Michael Stern. They're defying the corporate sameness that dominates the interstate freeway exits one bite at a time. The Sterns have been eating their way across America's highways and back roads for decades, and they keep finding memorable foods worth writing a book about in every state of the lower 48. They're experts at uncovering the fun things you just gotta try that you might not have heard of before. It's a great way to get the flavor of places you're traveling through so far from the familiar menus you find back home. Jane and Michael, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Rick.
Talk about different states. Are there states that have actual passion for a certain kind of food, like we have our state flower, our state bird, and our state food?
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, just take the subject, for example, of chili. The kind of chili that is acceptable and preferred in Texas, in fact, chili is the official state dish of Texas, is a absolutely beanless bowl of chili con carne, meaning
meat.
Chili and meat, and that's it. You put anything else in that, and a true Texan will kick you out of the state. On the other hand, go to Cincinnati, Ohio, and ask for chili, and you're going to get a plate of what they call five-way chili, which is spaghetti noodles, meat sauce, beans, onions, and cheese. In Texas, they wouldn't allow you to serve that. In New England, chili is different. In parts of the South, you're going to get chili made with goat meat. It's different everywhere.
You know, that's the same with the salad niçoise in France. I mean, when you eat the salad niçoise in Nice, it's got to have exactly this, and it's almost legally required. But you go to another place, and they're passionate about entirely different ingredients in that standard salad.
We had a German woman who was writing a book about American regional food interview us recently, and we were butting heads with her because she just said, give me an explanation of American food. And I, you know, we would say, well, that's like saying European food. I mean, it's French food, like German food, like Italian food.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we are just a conglomeration of many states, you know, many countries within one big giant landmass. But this country shares very little in common except hamburgers.
I just really enjoy preparing for these interviews because I just love just fantasizing about all this food that you guys have had the pleasure of eating as part of your work requirement. And we were talking about chili, and you've got this burnt end barbecued chili in Kansas City.
Yes. Now, burnt ends, that's actually sort of a cross between chili and barbecue. Burnt ends are the edges of the brisket after it's been barbecued. When they slice the brisket, you know how little pieces and nuggets and bits fall onto the cutting board? Those are the burnt ends.
Yes.
And you collect enough of those and put them into a sandwich or, like they do in Kansas City, top a bowl of chili with them and you have a magnificent meal.
Now, is that unique to the Woodyard, which is the restaurant where you enjoy this, or is that just a Kansas City thing?
Burnt ends started as a uniquely Kansas City dish, but they have spread around. There are several barbecues around the country that now do them.
My favorite is Speed Queen in Milwaukee for burnt ends.
For burnt ends, all right.
And, you know, like so many great ethnic dishes, it started as poor man's food.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it was just scraps.
Yeah, that's right.
You wouldn't serve the burnt ends to the boss, you know, so that's what the poor people ate.
Many of the standard dishes you have in Europe are peasant food that was just a way to get a second round of value out of the leftovers or the stuff that was too stale or whatever.
Well, think of the sandwich that defines New Orleans. It's called the po' boy.
The po' boy.
Because that's who ate it. And in fact, one of the things that you want in your po' boy, especially if you get a roast beef po' boy, is plenty of debris, which is their word for burnt ends. It's all the stuff that falls onto the cutting board when you slice the roast.
We would say debris.
Well, they say debris.
Yeah, debris. That's great. Before we leave chili, I was fascinated by Charlie Porubsky's grocery store chili in Topeka.
Yeah, that's such, I mean, the place, it's a real grocery store, and every Friday they close one of the grocery aisles so you can make your way to a back room where you get a bowl of Charlie Porubsky's chili, which is, again, this would not be allowed in either Texas or Cincinnati because it's much more of a hearty kind of Midwest blend. It's beans, beef, and what's really interesting about Porubsky's chili is the condiment that you put onto it. Like no place else, they have horseradish pickles that you must have on top of your chili.
That they make
the four
alarm. The pickles are ferocious, yes. The chili is not so hot, but the pickles are ferocious.
What else is great about this place, Rick, is It's like going to your mom's kitchen in 1955. All the cooking for the restaurant is done on a little four-burner gas stove that's probably 30 years old.
And he cooks the chili in a pot that he's been using for the last 30 years.
Whoa. One of my favorite things in my work is just when I come to a city that I know well, I got to do my work, and then I know I'm going to have dinner here. I can fantasize about it. I can start to salivate in advance, and I know it's solid. It's the same people working there. I'm going to have a rapport with the waiter, and I'm going to trust them, and they're going to bring me all the good stuff. If you're traveling around, let's think of some itineraries where you've got a destination. Talk about destination eateries.
I think for me, Doe's Eat Place in Greenville, Mississippi.
Okay.
Again, a place that's been there for 50 years.
You dine in the kitchen, actually. It's mismatched tables and chairs in the kitchen, but you will get one of the best steaks you've ever eaten.
And you know that that's a consistent experience. You go there and you have the same magic.
Because the menu has three items on it. And greatest steak in the world and the greatest tamales, Mississippi-style tamales, which are served in a coffee can by the dozen. Absolutely fabulous.
Can I just mention another destination? We just got back from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and there is a restaurant there. This has not been around for more than maybe 5 or 6 years. There's a restaurant there called Hell's Kitchen. No relation to the TV show by that name.
Uh-huh.
A guy named Mitch Omer is the chef there, and he is one of these just Zeus-like chefs. I mean, just brilliant ideas come out of his head all the time. It serves three meals a day. And one of the things you can get there, whenever we go to Minneapolis, I must go to Hell's Kitchen for breakfast because they make what they call Minoan porridge at breakfast. This is a recipe that he got by reading the journals of the explorers who had eaten Cree Indian food. It's long grain, wild rice,
yes,
cranberries, blueberries.
I saw the photograph of that in your book. It looked great.
Yes,
gorgeous.
And maple and cream.
The first time I ever had wild rice in my life, I didn't know it existed. And some friend from Minneapolis sent it to me.
It's labor-intensive.
It's labor-intensive. And it's interesting because we were talking with Mitch, and he said he sort of found the recipe in these old journals, and he cooked it, and he said it was terrible because it was too dry.
Right.
It was the cream, the hazelnuts, everything was great. So he added heavy cream to it. And that sort of totally transforms it into one of the most luxurious, delicious, natural foods you'll ever eat.
Now, this was sort of discovered and developed by Mitch, who runs the Hell's Kitchen in Minneapolis.
That's right.
You also say that their cinnamon bun is like one of the best anywhere. Now, that's pretty impressive that Mitch would excel on a national scale in both porridge and cinnamon buns.
And beyond that, I mean, his cinnamon bun, that's his father's recipe for a cinnamon bun.
Okay.
It is spectacular because you get a lot of really big cinnamon buns throughout the heartland. But this one is not only big, it's really delicious.
Caramel sauce.
Good caramel sauce. And the bread itself, the bun part of it is really sort of good. It's almost like a brioche, you know. But that's not all. I mean, this guy makes his own peanut butter. He roasts the peanuts, he grinds them, he adds a certain... I mean, this is the best peanut butter I've ever eaten.
I am literally drooling.
you're driving to Minneapolis and you're thinking, Hell's Kitchen. Mitch, hello.
Yes.
All right.
Now, that's a destination.
Jane and Michael Stern have been updating their directory to the best and most authentic regional American roadhouses, diners, greasy spoons, and beach shacks since the 1970s. And every few months, we check back with them on Travel with Rick Steves to see what they've been eating lately. They also suggest road food theme drives listed by region at their website, roadfood.com. When you do your work, and you've been doing this for 40 years now, believe it or not, you must have developed some interesting tricks. For instance, when I'm looking for a restaurant, even though it's inconvenient for my readers, if it's only open lunchtime on workdays, Monday through Friday, I know it's a local joint. That's a European thing. If it's on the late nights on Friday and Saturday, it caters to a different crowd. It doesn't mean it's not good. But there's something really special about a restaurant that only is for the lunchtime crowd. Also, I look for a small handwritten menu in one language in Europe, and that indicates it's going to be just a few things
Absolutely.
Dedicated for local customers and shaped with the season. What do you look for in a good restaurant? What are your telltale signs that maybe even if we didn't have one of your listings that we could look for in Bellingham or Fresno or Tallahassee and know that it's likely going to be a great place?
The telltale signs we look for are pretty much the same ones you do. In fact, I would say a good 50% or more of our favorite road food restaurants are places that open early for breakfast, maybe 5 in the morning,
okay.
and close at like 2 or 3 in the afternoon.
Because
most people then go home for dinner. But The breakfast and lunch is the most important part.
I've got two tricks also. One is if you go into a little cafe, especially in Ohio for some reason, if there are State Fair blue ribbons in the pie case,
oh, yes.
Meaning that the woman
State
who...
State Fair blue ribbons. See, I wouldn't see that in Seattle, but that sounds like a great tip.
In the Midwest, entering your pie in the State Fair and winning a blue ribbon for it, I mean, you're the queen of pies. I'm also a sucker for handwritten menus,
yes,
because that means that they do different things every day.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I'm a sucker for misspelled or badly typed menus because it means it's not Denny's or it's not a laminated menu that you get from Restaurant Central.
I've seen restaurants that have had the most charming menus, and then they go into some, they talk to some consultant or something, and they throw all the charm out, and they have this mass-produced thing that just has no character at all.
It happens.
Absolutely.
But I'll tell you, the best signs of a great restaurant are, it makes it a little difficult for the traveler, the best signs of a great restaurant are there is no sign whatsoever outside.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
And there is no written menu. You have to just know it exists.
And that exists in America, huh? I mean, you
find
that
there
in
are
Europe,
a few of those.
One of my tricks is finding a place that has low rent because all the chains get on the big giant pedestrian boulevard and so on. And, you know, I'm glad Starbucks pays the top dollar for the best location. But when I want a nice restaurant, I want a place that's, you have to look for to get to. And the locals are there and they're not spending a lot of money on their monthly rent.
Like, well, Bowen's Oyster Landing in South Carolina.
Bowen's Island.
Bowen's Island, which you don't even know there's a restaurant there. It's a pile of oyster shells.
Right.
And if you look behind it, you'll see that there's a restaurant.
No, and the other thing about the low rent is it generally means it's in a neighborhood, you know, where people probably can afford to live as well. And therefore, it's possible that the restaurant is where the locals go and can trust it and they return to it. So quality is important.
I also don't like ones that have signs saying buses welcome.
No.
Oh, tour buses welcome, yeah.
Uh-huh.
No, thank you. More tips from Jane and Michael Stern are just ahead to guarantee that your drives across the American landscape are a tasty experience. And in a bit, we'll also explore the back roads and off-road opportunities for enjoying the wilderness of Canada's West Coast. It's Travel with Rick Steves. Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. Tips about traveling in Europe and information about the EU are available at euintheus.org.